All right, welcome everybody. Are we good on the mics? All right. It's 1:30, so let's go ahead and get started. Welcome to the Database Refactoring. As you can see, my name is Chris Hoover, and I'm glad to have everybody here. I'm extremely nervous, so if I start talking too fast, someone please let me know, and I will try to slow down. Today, I'm going to give a brief introduction. I'm going to discuss the problem so that we can have a basis for where everyone understands where I've come through for this solution. Then we will obviously talk about the solution and try to do a small demo, and then hopefully have some time for question and answer at the end. So if everybody's ready, let's go ahead and get started. Who am I? I'm the senior database administrator at AWeber Communications. We're a small company outside of Philadelphia. I've been doing DBA work since the year 2000, and about the last 5 years, Postgres has been my primary or my solo database. So I've got quite a bit of experience there. In addition to Postgres, I've pretty much worked on all of the major databases, DB2, Oracle SQL Server, Sybase, you name it. I've probably either administrated it or I've coded for it. As far as AWeber, who are we? Well, we serve the opt-in email marketing software needs of the small businesses worldwide. Currently, we have about 58,000 small and medium business customers, and we serve them with a staff of about 43. And we have been in business since 1998. This summer we'll be celebrating our 11th anniversary, so we've been around for a while. And like I said, we're based outside of the Philadelphia area, and if our company can help you, our email or our website will be up at the end, and we'd love to show you how we can provide some better service and deliverability of your email needs. All right, let's talk about the problem. Who here has some sort of structural issue with your database? Amazing. I'm surprised that at least half the group here has that. You know, in my database experience, I have yet to come to a company or pull a product in and be able to see the database and be happy with the design. You know, there are just so many issues, whether it's just stuff that's plain out wrong or things that you see that for your environment could be done a lot better. And as a database administrator, I've kind of grouped what I want to focus on into two major areas. Databases with suboptimal design. The first issue I've seen a lot is non-normalized relations. I don't know what it is, if it's everyone comes out of the mainframe world, but I'm tired of seeing tables that have, you know, 50 columns to store status codes or store addresses in one table per row. They have them 10, you know, we're storing 10 addresses in a single row. I don't know why developers think they need that and why they don't listen to the database administrators, or they wait till after the design is done to hire us. But more and more I see this, and to me it's a big thorn in the flesh. It provides slow access. We're using more resources than we need. And then they think about it might be great for the code. And then they turn around 6 months, a year, 2 years later and say, oh, by the way, I need you to start reporting on this. And, you know, how do you query 50 columns of status codes to find if happens to have the status code you're looking for? It just, you know, it does not work. And the other area I've seen issues in is what I call inefficient relations. This is, take a table like you're going to store every website that your users and your company go out and visit. So what do? People build a table. They've got the user ID. They have the website visited and maybe the timestamp it went and visited, so that if you need to report to HR or whatever reporting you can do, they do. So then in that table, you end up with 10 million hit rows that say someone went to Google. You know, another million that said they went out to their, you know, their mail provider or whatever, and you're storing these huge text fields using lots of space when we could be taking that data and saying, okay, the user who uses Google, let's put a row over here in our visited website table and just put a link there and store it by ID and save substantial amounts of space. You know, lots of other ideas. Error logging is another area I've seen this a lot in, where we store the data too much, too often. We could really consolidate and save space, you know, have an overall better environment for us as DBAs by doing that. But, you know, the problem is we have to deal with managers. And I have yet to find a manager who wants to battle and, you know, let me do everything I want to do. No matter how good my idea is, management always has issues they bring up that we have to work around. And one of my favorite ones to hear is return on investment. You know, if you walk into your manager's office and say you come back and Tuesday you go to work, I've got this great idea. We're gonna redo our database and fix all our issues. Your manager looks at you and go, great, well, how are you going to do it? Well, it's going to take, you know, 6 or 12 months of developers working full-time to go through all the code and fix the SQL query so that it matches my new schema. You know, unfortunately, I don't know a manager in the world who's going to buy off on that. You know, if you've got 10 developers who make $50,000 on average, that's $500,000 if you need a year's worth of work, and that's just in development time. And when they look at the end of it, they say, well, I may get a better database, the application may be faster, but, you know, what's the proof? Until we do it, we're really not going to know for sure, and it's really hard for him or her to go up the chain to say, hey, we want to do this and spend this money, and, you know, we can't guarantee we're going to get any return on investment. The other thing I thought about is the loss of revenue from downtime. You know, when you go to your manager and say, we want to refactor our database, we want to go and change how our tables look, well, if you've got a 100 gigabyte table and you want to change that design, you've got to move all that data. And for most of us, that means taking the database offline for a substantial period of time. And as all of us know as database administrators, a database down means that somebody, whether it's us as a company or our customers who are paying for the service, are suddenly losing money. And I don't know, in my experience, managers have a hard enough time giving me the time to do a patch upgrade or do a major version upgrade of the database, let alone do something that I, as a database administrator, think is a great thing, but, you know, taking the hours away and not being able to tell the customer what a great improvement it's going to be, they just can't sell it. As I mentioned, you know, if we make the changes, we have to fix the application. And if you want to do it quickly, you need as much resources as you can. So you're pulling away your resources from new projects, and you're pretty much slowing your development. And whether you're the top dog in your industry or you're the last guy, no business can really afford to stop for a substantial period of time from developing new features, improvements. You know, and by having to do that and to go through all your code base and fix your SQL to match your new schema, you pretty much are stopping the majority of your new development. That's a serious issue for management and for your business. And like I was saying there, doing that means you're not developing new bells and whistles. So you can't go to your customers and say, give us more money because we now have these new nice little bells and whistle features or even needed features that for our application. Instead, we're sitting here saying, well, spend more money or keep becoming a customer because, well, we made some improvements on our backside and the back end of our system. And you might see an improvement, but, you know, we hope you do, but we can't guarantee it. And then just some application issues. Here's the biggest one that we've been talking about all along. It's the tight coupling of our application to the database. You know, no matter how many layers you have, whether you're going through middleware or whatever, eventually it comes down to that your application is querying your database. And if you change how the tables or the views or whatever that it's querying, you've broken your application. And that's something that we need to figure out how to resolve. And then secondly, just kind of an aside issue, we talked about the development. If you go change your underlying database, not only do you need the development time, but you've got your whole testing cycle to go through. And all of that, once again, affects your return on investment, affects your company's bottom line. And, you know, major changes like that could easily be, you know, depending on the size of your application, you could be talking 3-6 months to go thoroughly test all of that and to get your product back out. And then we kind of mentioned this a little bit, but this is more from the application side. The more you change your database, once again, the more time it's going to take to get that data into your new format, and the more downtime that requires, or the more inconvenience to your customers. Or let's face it, how many of you like to get up at, you know, do work at 2 or 3 in the morning so you can be outside of your customer's window? You know, I love MyPillow, and I hate it when the pager goes off and we have problems like that, or even when it's scheduled for a major maintenance period. You know, if I can get away from having to work in odd hours and do stuff that I can get my work done but not affect the customer, and I can do, you know, have a more of a normal life as a DBA, I really like that. I like having some free time, and like I said, ask my wife, I love MyPillow. It's hard for me to get up in the mornings. So we have the problem. We've got databases we don't like the structure of. There's some sort of intrinsic issue that we're unhappy with our databases. From a DBA, we have that problem. We have this issue from the management and the application that they don't want to give us the time. They won't give us the developers. The other areas we've mentioned, we have to solve all of these issues. So how can we do that? Well, obviously, we need to isolate the application from the database. And yeah, you're sitting there, okay, Chris, I knew that. I've known that for ages. Well, how are we going to do that? And that's what we're going to spend the time, the majority of the talk today, going over. So we're going to play with the table here. This is Believe it or not, this is a real live table that I have seen in my experience, and I kind of mentioned it. We've got mail to addresses. We have a user ID so we know whose these addresses belong. We have a complete address here, and then we have 9 additional addresses. So mail 1 all the way down to mail 10. Like I said, this is a real life example, but it makes an easy example to demonstrate the concept I've come up with. And I'm sorry it's after lunch. I would have much rather this been before lunch because this is really ugly and upsetting to see. All right, and like we talked about here, we've got our application, and then down here we have our database, and our application is just directly querying our mail to addresses. So like we said, if I go change mail to addresses in any way, especially because we all know developers are really notorious for doing select star, so even adding a colon potentially is going to break my application because of this direct connectivity. And so this is where we're going to start. Like we said, the first step we need to do is to isolate the relations from direct queries. We need to be able to get a buffer layer between our tables and the application. And, you know, there's probably other third-party products out there, but I want to do this inside the database as a DBA. I want to keep some control over this process. So the first thing I want to do is we're going to rename the table because obviously you can't have two objects in the same schema with the same name. So basically, we're just going to come in here, alter the table, mail to addresses, and I just appended a ridge on it so that I know that this was the original table. Secondly, we're going to create a view named as the original table. And just as you can see, just select everything from the table and creating the view as that. Obviously, I've shorthanded this to keep it fitting on the slide. I would actually name every column explicitly so that there are no mistakes in there. And then the important thing that we all know about in Postgres, rules are not writable, so we need to get views are not writable, so we need to get the rules out there that take and make the view to appear to be writable. So we need to create our 3 views. And this is where most of you probably know this, but a little bit of magic will start in here. For insert, our rule is going to be just, instead of inserting into the mail to addresses view, we are going to actually call a function to do our insert. And initially, the function is simple. This could actually be in the rule, but you'll see later on why I did it this way. We're going to take and just, in our function as a PLP GSQL function, we're going to insert into the original table our new values. Updating is very similar. We're going to use another function and pass in new and old this time and update our columns where our user ID is the old user ID so that, once again, we can keep this transparent. And then finally, our delete rule is a little SQL function that's just telling us to delete from the original table. Now, we talked about the fact that we want to do this with minimal downtime as part of the talk, what I've talked about in my talk. So we need to do this in a single transaction. So just wrap this all into one transaction. And for most of us, unless you have long-running queries, we should be able to insert that into our database, even if it's running. And for most of us, we should be able to do it transparently. If you want to do it in the middle of the day, you're welcome to. I obviously would try and do this at night. But still, I'm doing it this way in a transaction. You're going to instantaneously flip that table to be the view, and your application is going to be going in that way. And it'll be transparent to the application. So here now, what we've done here is now we've taken our application, no changes to it. It's coming down and talking to mail to addresses, but we've tricked it out. We've faked it out. It's talking to the view, and the view is now querying the original table. So by doing this now, we've started to insulate our application and our database from each other. Any questions so far? All right. So now that we've isolated our relations from direct queries, now we can have the fun and create our new schema. And this is, you know, as DBAs and architects, where you get to do whatever you want. There's pretty much the sky's the limit within reason. Obviously here, my normalization of this table is very simple. Over here on, let's see, that should be your left, is the original table definition. And then on the right here is my new table definition. I decided I don't like mailing to addresses because what type of mailing to addresses are these? So I took the chance to rename the table to call it customer mailing addresses. Obviously, we need to keep our primary key column. I took the opportunity to go ahead and rename to a little bit easier to understand definitions. And then I added a little bit down here that we're going to talk about in just a minute with a sort key and then an updated primary key. All right, we need to update the primary key. Obviously, we had the original table had one record that had user ID and then addresses 1 through 10. So if we're going to normalize this into a new table like I had there that had just one set of addresses and just a user ID, we could only insert one record if we kept the primary key the same. So I added a field called the sort key and added it to the primary key here. And we'll keep going here just a minute. The sort key is constrained to only allow the maximum number of rows I want. So in this case, we had 10 addresses possibility, so I've constrained, put a check constraint on the sort key to say the sort key needs to be between 1 and 10. And then, like I said, we combine that into the primary key. So now I have a primary key that says for a given user ID, I can have up to 10 records. And the other example we talked about with the 50 status code, you know, you would have the constraint sort key be 1 through 50 or whatever suits the need there. That way, in this way, two things have happened. First of all, we've guaranteed now that we don't store more data than we are expecting. You know, if the application for some reason changed and tried to send us 11 records because they thought we changed the table and we didn't, it's going to stop it. And the other side is we're never going to go behind the scenes changing data and end up with 11 records and try and send it to the application, which would be even worse and blow the application up. So now we haven't really changed how the database looks right now as far as the application. It's still coming down and talking to the original mailing address table. Mail address is a ridge. But we've gone ahead and we've created our new table so that we're ready to start putting the data in there and get the real fun happening. All right, now we need to alter the original relations. The first thing we need to do is we have the issue. Once we combine these into the view, we have two tables. We have an original table, and we have our new normalized schema over here. Who has the proper record? We need to track that. So what I came up with is just real simple to add a Boolean field to the original table. I called isMigrated. And another trick here is that I'm adding alter the table. I'm adding it as a Boolean. I'm not adding a default or a not null to this. And by doing that, especially in the newer versions, it should not cause a table rewrite. It should just be an update to PG class to add the column, and the column will appear to be null. If you do put a default or the not null constraint and a default on there, you're going to force a table rewrite. It's going to lock your table, and once again, you're going to potentially cause application issues or downtime. Once again, the isMigrated tells us which row is authoritative. When you come and select a table, if isMigrated is not set to true, then you know that the row still exists in the original table. If it is set to true, you know that that row has been migrated to your new schema and that the authoritative is on the new side. And once again, this is really important here, no default on that column so you don't force a table rewrite and the locking associated with that. And then the other important thing here is to remember to create an index on that column. Our view is going to be using that, looking where the column is set to not true, so we want to make sure that we add an index so that we keep up our performance. The key to this, for those of us who are on 8.2 or 8.3, is make sure we do it concurrently to prevent locking. If some of you are on the older 8.1 or earlier systems, unfortunately, you will lock this table because there is not the concurrent option. So just beware of that. All right, now that we've set the new table up, or the old table, so that we know if we've migrated the row about it, we need to update our functions to actually get data moving to our new relations. So in our insert function that the rule is using, we need to always make sure that we insert a record. If there was data, a record in the original table, then we need to make sure we have at least one record in the new table. And for me, I've always chosen to use record address number 1 for that. So whether it has data in it or not, if there was a record in the original table, I'm going to go ahead and insert a record with sort key of 1 into my new table. And the reason for this, you'll see in a minute, is it's required for the view. I need at least one record in there if there was an existing record, and I need to know what record it was. Then basically, the insert's going to go and check the other nine remaining addresses, 2 through 10, and say, is there any data in here? Now, this is a cool feature for some of you guys. This is an opportunity to maybe do some data cleaning if you need to. I worked in a shop which used the horrible language of COBOL, and several people came out of the mainframe. So I had records at one point that were completely spaced out. I don't ask me why. I don't know why you need to store, you know, an address or city that's just spaces, but the wonderful coders decided to do that. So this would be an opportunity as a DBA that behind the scenes I could go and clean up some of that data. And so, you know, if it has data in you, what has data is going to be different for each one of you. You may be in a situation like that where just because it is spaces or whatever, that may be critical, and it may be an opportunity that you can do and trim up some space and clean up your database a little bit. So, but any row that has data, then we make sure that we insert the proper sort key into the new relation. And it obviously, here comes your space savings to a small extent, depending on how you were storing your data. If there is no data in that record, in that given address or whatever piece of data you have, then we don't need to store it, because there's no reason to store empty data or null data sets in our system. The update function gets changed to basically do the same thing. The initial trick here is we do this update here. The first thing is we go in and we update the original record, or we try to, and we try to set it to be true that we have migrated this row. And we do this little trick here that we only want to set it if it's not already set. And the reason for that is that allows us to check the found variable in our PLPGSQL function. So if found gets set, meaning that we had a successful update, we know that that row needs to be migrated and has never been migrated, and we can just turn around and call our insert function. If it returns false, then we know either the row is already migrated or that this is a brand new, if it returns false and we're doing the update, then we know that the row has already been migrated or already exists in the new table. You know, it was a new record that never made it to the old tables. And in that case, it becomes very similar to how the insert works, where we're going to have to walk through each field and check and say, does the new field mail21 user equal, or mail21 city equal the old mail21 city? And if there's any difference, if it is different from in any way, then we need to perform an upsert. And this is something very easy to miss, because it would be very easy to go and do an update. But we have to remember that the application has no idea that we've changed the underlying data structure behind it because of the view. So if you do an update and they've added a new address, and you don't check and you don't do actually do an upsert, you've just lost data. And that's unacceptable in almost every single database out there, to lose data. So for each step we go through, for each address, if we're going to do if it does turn out we need to do an update because it's different, it's distinct from, then we need to do the update, check the found. If not found, we need to turn around and insert that row. And that way we can guarantee that while the application may change and give us more or less addresses, we don't have to worry about losing it. And also, depending on your situation, you know, if the application deletes addresses, you could also do a check here and then delete that associated key if you choose. The delete function stays very simple. We're just going to delete from both tables. If you decide to delete this user's mailing addresses, we're just going to clear it out on both sides. There's no reason to keep data on either side if it's been asked to be deleted by the application. Alrighty. So we've isolated our relationship, or we've isolated the relations from the application by doing the view. So now, and then we have taken the view we've taken and normalized so that we have the original and the new tables, and we've created the ability for data to start moving. So what's left is we need to add a trigger. This is just something I thought of. Technically, nothing should talk to the original table. We've changed the name. Nobody should know about it. But there's probably not a DBA in here who hasn't had a user who go do something and you say, how in the world did you find that? Or how did you do that? So just as a safety net, because we know our users will do what we don't think they'll ever do, I decided that we needed to make sure they don't ever update a row if it's been migrated. So just put a trigger check on your original table that says if you're updating and the row has been migrated, we're going to raise an exception so that they can't do that. Once again, very simple. If the row is migrated, raise the exception telling them that the row is migrated, and otherwise return new and the update will go through. So like I said, this should never happen, but I don't trust my users at all. The other thing we want to do is remove the insert privileges from the original table. There's no reason to ever be inserting into this table, and the rules and stuff will ignore the insert. Removal of insert privileges does not affect the rules. So we can delete from it. We can update the original table if someone wanted to, as long as it hasn't been migrated. And then we're preventing inserts, so that data should always flow to our new tables. All right, now here comes kind of the really ugly part, is we need to update the query to look at both sets of tables. And I know this is small. I wanted to try and fit what I could on. Basically, we have a potential of having 10 mailing addresses in this table, but we don't know how many we'll have. We're going to be guaranteed to have one because I'm always inserting record one because I need, at some point, right down here, I need a place to start. So we're going to select our user ID. We're going to select the first mailing record. Then we're going to select M2 all the way down to M10. And each one of those is just a left join on the customer mailing address table, matching on user ID and where the sort key equals the sort key we care about. And then we come down to the where clause. We're just going to start looking with record one. And then we union that with the mail to addresses original, selecting where it is not, where not is migrated or is migrated is null. Any of you who might be newer DBAs, that's an important check. Just remember that null does not equal false or true. It's its own little beast, so we have to check for both conditions of being false or being null. And like I said, this is the ugly part that fortunately your users will never see. And if they do happen to go look at that view, they're going to walk away shaking their head because it's just going to be this massive amount of query, a massive amount of SQL in there. But by doing this now, we have a view sitting up here, and now it is querying from both tables, and it's finding what should be the authoritative record from either side. And once again, our application has no idea we've done this. So like I said, the view now allows us to pull the appropriate records from either the old table or the new table. There's one thing I just thought about I forgot to put on here. I didn't mention it. Make sure you create your indexes on the new tables, however, whatever you need. I didn't really mention that, but the schema should duplicate as much as possible, you know, what you had as far as indexes and things like that. Our insert rule on the view normalizes data and puts it into the new tables. So now every time the application goes insert into the mail to addresses table, behind the scenes, we immediately go, we normalize that data into our new table. The update rule migrates the data from the old table and inserts it into the new table if that's needed. Otherwise, it just updates the new tables. So once again, if there's data in the old table, we mark it as migrated and we shove it into the new table. And if there's not, we just go ahead and do the updates on the new table. And then our delete rule removes data from both tables. So here at the end, we have our application sitting up here. Behind the scenes, without its knowledge, we've changed what mail to addresses is. It still has the same structure it's expecting, but now it's a view. And the view is pulling data from mail to addresses orig, and then it's pulling and writing to the customer mailing addresses. And so you can see here now we've been able to take the ugly table and to normalize it into a much better structure that should be more efficient in the long run and get the data flowing. Now, a couple other points we had. We talked about downtime. I've essentially, especially on an 8.2 or 8.3 database, should be able to do this. And you can do it in multiple pieces, but you can do it without having to take the system offline, if so desired. Secondly, we talked about the time it takes to when you refactor your database, you have to move all that data. Here, there is time spent, but the time is spent record by record. As the customer comes in or the user comes in and updates a record or inserts it, then we do it. We do that migration. We pay the cost over time instead of all at once. And, you know, as far as ROI, once again, we're not changing the application right now, so we're not, you know, the manager's not going to pay in salaries for months for developers or to go through. Now, you know, if you're a good DBA, there's going to be testing time. I don't recommend you just do this, go back into your office and do this Tuesday and throw it live. I would recommend you, you know, run it through your testing cycle just for sanity. But, you know, like I said, it should be it is transparent to the application. So just some benefits I kind of thought about. Once again, no application changes required. And that's the key problem that we as DBAs have, is that we can't break our applications, you know, without getting serious development time or, you know, really upsetting our developers and customers. You don't have to migrate the data completely. It'll migrate it over time. It can be done with the system online unless you happen to be in an 8.1 or earlier database. The great thing is problem areas can be corrected. You know, a lot of times as DBAs, we might sit down and want to architect an entire solution. We can fix the entire database all at once. Here, as you saw, I can do it table by table. I could do it application by application. Whatever scope as a DBA and your management team is comfortable with you addressing, you can do it very piecemeal and piecemeal and do it slowly and carefully. And, you know, and eventually your application developers can come back into some of that code and fix it so that they'll be querying directly against the new tables, but they don't have to do it immediately. And like we talked about, the data does self-migrate, and for those of us who, you know, may be dealing with huge tables, you know, we can go ahead and write a little application, a script or whatever, that behind the scenes just sits there and, you know, pops rows slowly as our I/O and CPU load will allow us, and put them into the normalized form so we can do it and take some of that away from the end users. Plus the fact that I believe a lot of us have a lot of historical data that the user will never touch anyway that we need to get migrated over. All right, a couple caveats and gotchas I thought about, and there's probably more than this. First of all, I believe we're doing a lot more work. We were doing one insert into a table, you know, insert this gigantic row into the table, and we're now taking the time to split it up. We're having to check whether or not we need to insert the row. So there is going to be some increased CPU usage. That's going to be dependent upon, you know, how complicated your functions end up being. Obviously, we've also gone from one I/O op or one insert operation to potentially 10. And the overall sum of it's going to be slightly larger because each record now has the user ID from what I was showing, and it has a sort key, and the primary key is slightly larger. So overall, there's a little bit more. If you had a complete record, all 10 records in my example, there is a little bit more I/O you're going to be experiencing. So, you know, this is a great solution, I think, for a lot of us. It can get us kind of, I mean, it is duct tape and baling wire to get around the issue. And, you know, I like how my manager said, it is a technology debt that you're charging up right now because of how we're doing it and not fixing the core issue with the application. But, you know, if you are in a system where you're already I/O constrained or your CPU constrained, then I would recommend you wait until you get into a better situation with your hardware before you try this, because I have been in that situation, and as we all know, you know, it could be the straw that breaks the camel's back, and that's not what we want here. And then there is a possibility that your query times will increase a little bit. We are hitting two different tables, you know, so there is that possibility there, depending on how the planner decides to choose and how you have it indexed, so something to very carefully watch out for. So let's have a little bit of fun here. Let's go ahead and do a demo.
Before the demo,
yes, sir.
Why wouldn't you move the data from the old table into the new table?
You would, and I recommend that you do it with like a script. But the issue, the problem I'm trying to solve is how to do this with absolute minimal downtime. So if you got a 100 gigabyte table of data, that's going to take hours or days to migrate, depending on how complex your normalization is. So let's get the system up live, look where it can view the new schema and the original one, and over time, let the DML do the migration and then come in behind the scenes, if needed, with a little script or a program that goes and does the migration of the older records or however, what order you want to do it in to get the data completely migrated, but do it in an online fashion so that our users never know we're doing it. Any other questions right now before we start the demo? All right, looks like we're doing pretty good on time. All right, is that visible? Is that good for everybody, or do I need to try and increase the font somehow? All right, so here we are. Got my wonderful little PGCon database. It's the exact schema we were talking about, the mail to addresses. So here, once again, you can see the horribly ugly table, the user IDs, all 10 of the addresses, and so to begin with, like I said, the first thing we want to do is get the view in place, isolate the application from the actual table itself. So let's go ahead and do that. And now, I did that in a small transaction. I now have the view mail to addresses. And then we've got the view now, and we've renamed the table. And the view definition is just selecting straight from the table. Is it DV? I forget. Oh, well. What? Yeah, I was going to view the view source. I already showed it earlier, so we won't worry about that. I've got to get more. I should have went to Selena's talk, but I went to a different one. I'll have to watch that. Thank you, Robert. Okay, there it is underneath the definition or the actual column. So once again, I've defined every column in here instead of doing the select star just to make sure that we don't have any issues. And we're just selecting it straight from the mail to original. And as we all know, that's going to be simple. I can select rows from there and it'll come out of the original table. Next, we're going to go through and run. I'm going to go ahead and I've created a new schema. So now you can see we're back at that stage where I've got the view talking to the old table, and we've went ahead and created the new table. Here we altered the original table, adding that column, and then we created the index concurrently. And I'll go ahead and do the last one so we can actually see it in action. We'll alter the view. All right, so now we have mail to addresses. If we look at it, you can see we're selecting everything, and on the top here, we're selecting from the original table where it is not migrated or the is migrated column is null. And then the bottom section is doing the series of left joins to pull the data out of the normalized table. So if we go ahead and just select from the view, you can see this wonderful data I generated, just to throw some data out there. So we can see here, we'll just choose user ID number 4, and if we go look, right now, obviously, user ID 4 is in the original table. Oops. So I pulled him out of the original table. If I select the new table, since we just created, obviously, he won't be there. So obviously, this wonderful, horribly named child here, we need to give him a better name than 8C, whatever all that is. So let's go ahead and update this just to show the data migrating. Update and mail to addresses. Set mail to
one. Underscore first. Name equal to Chris, where user ID equals 4.
All right, so we went ahead and updated that, and I'll go back here and just pull the record out of the view. If I can type my SQL correctly. All right, so you can see here, we did have a successful update. Pulling out of the view shows that I've changed the first name of this person to be Chris. If we go ahead and look at the original table, the critical thing here, the name did not update yet, and we set the isMigrated flag to true to notify the system. Yes?
Does this technique allow for doing access not by user ID? Where you can say where update where mail to first name equals?
Oh, yeah. And you could run any normal DML should work. Any normal update that you could run should work. In this case, obviously, I didn't index those columns, so it would be slow. But you could update by whatever, however you want to, as long as, you know, if you updated here by first name, potentially, if this was real day, you know, you'd be updating multiple records. So. If we take the opportunity to go look at the new table. Here you can see we have updated it. I only changed mail to address one first name, so only the first record shows the Chris. Yet we did have 10 full. This was a full record of 10 addresses. So now you see we have a user ID of 4 with a sort key of 1 through 10, and all the data has been successfully migrated over to the normalized table, all just by running that one simple DML statement. We can also show the inserts. Insert into mail to addresses. Nope, there's a foreign key there, so I need to insert into. Added a new user there, so we'll add a mailing to addresses for them. And we're just going to add into mail to address, mail to one first name, and mail to one last name. Okay, we need the user ID. Org name. All right, so there, sorry about that. Finally got the row to insert there. And we can now we look over here, I only added on that insert, the application only tech. We're pretending it only sent the first record with the testing 1, 2, 3. for this poor soul's name, and you can see we only have the one record over there, where in the original table, you know, we would have had all those columns displaying. And so just a quick example that to show the idea as an actual working idea that it is possible to do this. And any questions so far about what I'm doing? All right. So time for questions. If not, that was my idea for how we can kind of work around some of the constraints we're under, and I hope it was helpful. And I'll be glad to answer any questions in person if anybody has any. Thank you very much.